Welcome in, everyone, to the 58th episode of the Deep Dive Dynasty Podcast. We, as always, are your hosts, Colin and Toby. Toby, how are you doing?
I'm great. We are currently drafting defensive players in IDP League, and I feel inept for the first time in, you know, many months.
Yeah, not our specialty.
I feel inept.
Yeah, it's a lot easier taking offensive guys that we put a lot of time into rather than taking shots we're not super confident in. IDP is not our specialty. Dynasty in general, however, is. We are here to talk through many of your questions. This is going to be our first mailbag in a long while. I think since partway through the season we had a mailbag.
There's that's a lot of mail. Our bag is full.
As it always is. Got DMs. I do have some that have been piling up over the last few weeks, but I also posted a thread both on Twitter and on Reddit, and I've got a bunch of your guys' questions here that we're going to answer through. Toby has not seen these, but I'll read them out to him.
I'm going in blind.
Yeah. There's only one that I've done a little bit of prep for.
Okay.
And why don't we start off right there? Before we get into it, though, of course, if you want to see those threads on Twitter, make sure you follow us at Deep Dive Dynasty there and keep up with everything we've got going on. The first question that came up actually last week in the replies on the Reddit thread to our Deep Stashes episode, we had shots that are good to take after your draft. And so we got this comment from CornFreak976, you know, the natural thing to be freaky about. He said that he wants to hear our take on Michael. It's written out as if it's Strachan, but it's Strahan, I believe I heard it. Somehow this guy wasn't too much on our radar. He was a wide receiver who was taken with the first pick of the seventh round to the Indianapolis Colts. And what's going to jump off the page to you is I can show you his profile now. So he is a 6'5", 226-pound receiver who ran a 4.54 and, despite being at a really small school, put up a 98th percentile college dominator. So right off the bat, he went to Charleston College, which, to be real, is a college I had never heard of. And then basically this comment came in and I said, rather than me giving you my take on him right now, why don't I do a little bit of film research and I'll get back to you on this episode. And if I do like him, I can recommend him to everyone. So I did so. And this is basically my thoughts on him. Mike Strachan, or however exactly you pronounce it. Of course, he's huge, and in the conference that he was in, he was very obviously dominant. He basically looked like a DK Metcalf out there compared to the competition. I thought that he was really good at tracking the ball and had pretty decent hands, and then he also had, of course, very good strength, pretty solid speed. He doesn't look quite that fast on tape, I would say, but he's still very fast, and he gets some separation very often just by running straight down the sideline, and he's just bigger and faster than everyone, so he can go up and get the ball. I do think that he needs to be coached up, get more refined. He's not a great route runner. He didn't have to do a lot to get separation on the DBs he was faced up against, but I think he's a great shot to take. Obviously, this is a guy that got draft capital. Like, if I'm looking at him versus someone who I see kind of similarly in a Tamorian Terry,
sure,
he's on a team on the Colts where there's somewhat of an opening. They have three guys, Paris Campbell, T.Y. Hilton, and Michael Pittman. But realistically, I don't think Hilton's around for that long, and the other two haven't truly established themselves. So down the line, a couple of years, this could be a guy who could see the field. And I am just as happy to take a late shot after your draft on a guy like this as I am pretty much everyone else we talked about last episode. So I thought he was a good guy to start off with because someone of that athletic profile and put up in the last two seasons, his last two seasons being 2018 and 2019, 1,007 yards and then 1,319 yards. That's great.
Putting on numbers.
Regardless of what conference you're in, he's putting up numbers and he is an athletic freak. So he's definitely the type of player that is absolutely worth going after because he's free. Why not? I like it.
Don't mind that take at all.
Okay, I'll go through another couple that I have on DMs. Here's the first one from AndyB5533.
Andy Bernard.
That's him. So he basically says, how do you rebuild? And he has a specific instance where he has the 101, the 103, the 105, the 107, and the 201.
He has the what?
Yeah. So all of that on top of Dobbins, J.J. Ruggs. Every second pick, he's going to take someone off the board.
Impressive.
He says he's got no elite quarterback, but it is a single quarterback league. He's got okay, but not great wide receivers. And the running backs are only Dobbins and Singletary. And his tight end is just T.J. Hockenson. So what he asks, and this is the main part of his question, To start off this draft, should he take Chase and load up on the wide receivers, or should he draft Harris at the 101 and then Williams and worry about the wide receivers later? So when you're in this rebuild mode and you have so much draft capital, do you want to prioritize running back or wide receiver is essentially his question.
It's me. I'm taking Harris as my very first pick and then just smashing all best wide receivers. You take your Harris to make sure you got one great running back who is locked in. You can trade away if you really need. Mm-hmm. And then you are trying to accumulate as many wide receivers as possible. As everyone knows, wide receivers have a much longer and safer shelf life on a dynasty team than a running back, obviously. So taking Najee is like the one knock against that. I mean, Colin could easily say right now, no, just go full wide receiver. And I would totally understand that. But if it's me, you take a Najee to make sure you have that one elite talent at running back to kind of maybe even make some sort of a push if you start hitting on all your other wide receivers. And then you're just going to smash it on all wide receivers. Especially if it's a single quarterback league, you're not taking a quarterback, in my advice.
I would definitely agree. You're not taking a quarterback at least until what could be your 201 pick.
But yeah.
Looking at the top, I'm always going to go best player available. And best player available to me is Najee Harris. So I'm after Najee Harris at the 101.
Good.
Likely Chase is gone. But if not, in a lot of these leagues, the running backs are thin. So it could be Etienne and it even could be Javonte. And so at 103, I would follow the rankings that we have on our Twitter at Deep Dive Dynasty. And I would take Chase or I would take probably one of those running backs because I want to get those elite assets. Then you also have, of course, a very good tight end who is a solid option. I know you do have Hockenson. But basically, I'm not too worried about positional. I'm going to take Harris with that first pick because he's the top guy on my board. And then we're going to see how the picks fall. Because to build up from a roster that isn't competing right now and to get there, you're going to need a lot of assets. And realistically, what you're trying to do when you're drafting is to get the maximum amount of value. Someone like Harris, maybe if your team doesn't pull it together and it's longer term, so you're not really going to compete for the next few years and he may not be the right piece to work for your team, well, in a year or two, you can just trade him for elite wide receivers. You're getting that maximum value, and I think that Harris is the maximum value, and I would continue to just take the top guy and just get that maximum value because you can make the trades after the fact as long as you're willing to put in the work and just figure out the rest of your lineup once you have maximized the amount of value you have. My final DM we're going to go here is from KMK5414. Similar to what I was just talking about, he says, how do you know when or how to come out of a rebuild? He says he's always been the type of player to constantly be going for the win and churning out his draft picks for assets, but he entered a full teardown last offseason. He collected a lot of young assets and draft picks, and now that it's going to start getting better because he had a lot of picks last year, basically he wants to ask, when are you okay to be moving those picks when you're on the board, for example, to pick up some of those later assets and then really push for it? So as a general question, how do you know when is the time to stop building for the future and start trying to win right now? Here would be my answer right off the bat. I would usually make this decision partway through a season.
Yeah.
Unless you're in a certain situation where maybe you have a crazy amount of great young wide receivers but no running backs and that's really hurting your potential to put up some points, you can have a young team that hits on a few guys. You can take that Najee Harris. Who knows? You could take a Michael Carter and he surprises everyone. He's a top 10 running back this year. And if that happens, your team has made that jump and you don't have to make that call now. You can wait possibly until your trade deadline, but possibly also before then, it becomes very evident that you've got a real contending team here. So whether you trade the draft picks now or trade the players that you picked with those draft picks later, I want to see it at least to some degree from my team and not just project, ooh, okay, now I've got Chase and Harris along with Dobbins last year. I'm gonna really push. Because you don't know, maybe those guys are all busts and you pushing and grabbing a Mike Davis just to go on a run this year could be absolutely throwing your capital out the window.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with prognosticating even after like 5 weeks of a season. Like mm-hmm. You can do it pretty early on into a season, but the moment you realize that your team is shite, or at least I think the worst dynasty football team is the team that just misses playoffs.
Oh, of course, that's the worst spot to be.
It's the absolute worst spot to be. And if you start recognizing that that's going to be you, it's going to be really hard to be like, I'm going to push for it and just get into playoffs. Mm-hmm. But if you can in some way have clairvoyancy enough to recognize I'm going to be fringe, and even if I make it, I'm going to lose, that's the point where you can start saying, okay, it's rebuild time. I'm going to start accumulating picks instead of having a really frustrating, hovering around 500 type of win season. So I agree with Colin. You want to do it when your season starts, and I recognize it's difficult to do. You want to do it as early into the season as possible, in my opinion.
Funny side note, I was just remembering the comments that I was reading today as they were coming in on the Reddit thread, and I was going to shout out a certain user because I know I got this question again for the second time. So I was just going to say, you know, also shout out to this guy. He asked the same question. It's KMK5414. It's the same guy. So shout out to you, man. You asked it twice, and I hope you're happy with your answer. Going into our Reddit thread now from LaxKid07.
That's so lax, man.
He asks, which first round rookie do you think is most likely to bust? So let's give our 12, and let's say not quarterbacks. 12 players, you've got Najee Harris, Javonte, and Etienne locked in as three running backs. Then you've got Pitts, of course, as the tight end, so that's four, and we'll go six wide receivers. We'll say they are Chase, Smith, Waddle, Bateman, Terrace Marshall, Elijah Moore.
I got mine pretty quick. Mine's Rashad Bateman.
Okay.
Rashad Bateman, in terms of a bust, because the passing volume. I know it's kind of a stock answer, but there is a world in which Lamar Jackson does not continue to rise and excel as a passer and does not produce more passing yards than he has, which, again, they've taken a first-round wide receiver before that was highly touted and was supposed to be great. Rashad Bateman, when I'm looking at him as opposed to Hollywood Brown, yes, they are very different players, but in terms of prospects and draft capital, they're not all too dissimilar. In fact, Hollywood Brown was earlier than Rashad Bateman off the board. Mm-hmm. If Rashad Bateman does not have Lamar Jackson leveling up, or at least the offense realigning and trying to get Jackson off his feet, or at least throwing through the air more, he's not going to put up the numbers that you would like from a first-round rookie. So he's my first bust, or most likely to bust.
Yeah, for sure. With Rashad Bateman, my kind of counterpoint would be, I think his floor is basically what we've seen with Marquise Brown, where Marquise Brown's been like a wide receiver 3 or 4, and considering that he was a first-round wide receiver, he's definitely been a disappointment in the NFL, but he might not be a huge bust even if he hits that floor, because realistically with the players they have on their roster right now, I just can't see Bateman not getting that early opportunity. So one player that I think is slightly more likely, and it comes down to just the profile and what we've seen in college, is Jaylen Waddle. Jaylen Waddle, you'd probably be taking him a slight bit earlier than Bateman, but there's two major flaws with the profile of Jaylen Waddle, and one is super obvious, and it's been that he is constantly injured. So that is very rough, and we have seen so many incredibly talented players fall out of the league and get hurt. That's just something that you can't really control for, and we have already seen that with Waddle. So it's possible, not saying it's likely or even that much more likely than any other player, because injuries are fairly random, but that could easily, if his injuries continue, take him out of the league fairly quickly. And then the other thing with Waddle is that he could be that speed burner type guy who doesn't see a huge target share. Because of the other wide receivers that are there, I think he's likely to play on the slot, and that is a great sign for him. But if he isn't, down the line, if he is used just to spread that offense, he could become that Henry Ruggs type of guy who, like I already said, doesn't get the target share. And if that happens, I can't see him quite living up to the hype that, you know, that's where you're drafting him right now, is hoping that there's going to be so much more to his profile.
Jaylen Waddle is my easy number two. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Fair enough. Kenny Moose 32 says, do you see Trey Sermon actually contributing to fantasy this year, or will he be this year's Vaughn?
I don't think he's as bad as Keyshawn. I don't think there's a scenario in which he totally disappears into irrelevant mist in that 49ers backfield, which has proven to get almost everyone some touches, and everyone's going to have a one or two blow-up games. I feel like the worst thing that happens to Sermon is he has one 20-point game and then just does nothing the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. That's about worst-case scenario. So could I go on the record and say, yeah, he's going to be a consistent fantasy producer? No. I'm way too scared for that. But he is too good an athlete playing at too high a level right now in his career that he's just going to get outplayed by other bench guys and backups, that he's not going to find himself on the pitch, which is exactly what happened to Keyshawn Vaughn. So
yeah,
I disagree. Or I say no. He I ain't disagreeing with you, Kenny Moose. I got no beef against you. But I think Trey Sermon will find himself on the field far more times. And because of that, he will make more of an impact than Keyshawn Vaughn last year.
I would have to agree. And obviously last year when you were drafting Keyshawn Vaughn out of the rookie drafts and when he was rising all the way up to the first round, there was no Fournette. So it was looking like him and Ronald Jones. And
LeSean McCoy,
yeah,
I guess. LeSean McCoy.
And that situation got a lot worse once Fournette arrived. And of course, now Fournette's re-signed and everything. So Keyshawn Vaughn's value has just plummeted very quickly because of all that. The thing that I like so much more about Trey Sermon is the offense that he's in has proven one to use that committee.
Yeah.
He is going to be one of the guys in rotation. It is absolutely possible he's number three or four in the rotation, and that would not be ideal at all. But I think because of the offense and the fact that they guaranteed use a committee and they will be efficient because of the scheme, I just don't think he has as much potential to bust. But that being said, I think he still can be a bust for where you're drafting him. He could easily get outplayed by some of the other players on that roster, because if Shanahan doesn't think that he has that skill set to hit the hole when he needs to, because essentially that's all it is. You run outside zone and you put your foot in the ground and you run up in a straight line. You have to be fast. If he isn't doing that as well as a 32-year-old Raheem Mostert, he could become like a goal line specialist.
It's hard to outrun Raheem.
Well, that's true. He's very fast. Okay, next up, we've got FF Noob, which I hope we can help you out, FF Noob. He says, Michael Thomas, outlook with Taysom Hill or Jameis Winston? First of all, I would say that is, there's a large dichotomy there. The amount of targets I see him getting, if Taysom Hill is the starter, is very different. Nothing. It's very different from what he'd be getting from Jameis.
Everything.
So, Jameis Winston, you have to assume, is not really to a massive degree going to change his ways. If he is the starter there, he's going to throw a ton, he'll be slightly inaccurate, and he'll throw some picks, but at the same time, he'll put up a ton of yards, just like he did on the Bucks. And I love that for Michael Thomas.
Yes.
Taysom Hill also isn't the most accurate guy, but I don't think he'll be throwing as many deep bombs, and that could be in Michael Thomas's range, playing in that slot role. But overall, I don't think the offense will be producing as much. Of course, Taysom's going to run a bit. And clearly, that would not be as ideal of a situation for Michael Thomas. The tough thing is, we just straight up don't know. We don't know any more than you do, FF Noob.
Yeah.
We're all noobs in this scenario because we don't know. I've heard many other analysts talking about, how do you stat out this team? Because you basically have to do it twice. You have to stat it out as if it was Jameis and stat it out as if it was Taysom. And those are totally different numbers across the board.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, I think Michael Thomas is probably a bit undervalued right now because people were so disappointed in his last season. Regardless, and I guess what would be the worst case scenario, that Taysom Hill is the starter all year, I still think he can be a very solid player. It's pretty nuts to think that like he scored zero touchdowns last year. That's not happening.
No.
Not happening again. So even if it's Taysom Hill, I don't mind buying him, but the upside of that offense being a lot more pass-heavy with a Jameis Winston behind center gives Michael Thomas a lot of upside for me to shoot for in Dynasty.
Just think of a Godwin or Evans when you had Winston there.
Godwin, you know, playing out of that slot is somewhat similar, and we saw what he did 2 years ago.
And it was unbelievable. So, I mean, he's a volatile asset, to say the least, but I agree that his upside is not being talked about enough.
FF Noob actually has a second question, and it is, your thoughts on tanking, actively losing versus starting a weak team by trading assets for picks? And he says also that he's seen a 10-team league with six teams making the playoffs where four of the teams of the 10 are full-on tanking from week one. And I will say, that scenario sucks.
Oh.
But apparently Toby loves that.
Just imagine that. You're like, oh, what's happening in the world of fantasy today? Well, there's an exciting game between these two. And, oh, four lineups just not set whatsoever, actively tanking.
Hmm. So there's two different ways you can view tanking. Because one, to me, is completely acceptable and even encouraged. And the other should be outlawed by your league. One is just trading your top players away for picks, but you are still starting the best lineup. And that lineup could be awful because, mm-hmm. you know, I've been in a league where someone had like 8 first round picks. And so to get all those 8 first round picks, they had to trade away a lot of capital. That question we answered earlier where he had 1-3-5-7, I'm sure his roster was pretty bad.
Pretty garbage.
But in that scenario, I think it has to be a rule that he is still, to a reasonable degree, putting forward his best lineup. Because I have also seen the other side where a manager in a must-lose game, quote-unquote, because he's playing another bottom guy in the league, is starting a Dare Ogunbowale in a year where he scores 1 point all year. And yeah. that should straight up be not allowed. So I don't like that side of it when people are straight up going out of their way, like you're saying, not even setting their lineups mm-hmm. or just playing players that beyond some reasonable doubt are clearly not the best options for him to start. So in those scenarios, totally against it. But in terms of trading away your assets for futures and then making sure that your picks are going to be early that year, I'm very okay with that.
Yep. I just echo that. It's frustrating to be in a league that you want to be competitive and you're in it to have fun and watch matchups go down. To have someone else set their lineup, not really fantasy football.
Mm-hmm. We've got another 2 questions from Scrooply Nooples, which is 2 words.
Okay.
He says a couple things he's been thinking about. First one is, what are our thoughts on the Chargers tight ends? So they have Jared Cook, who they signed.
Cookie.
Donald Parham and Trey McKitty, who they drafted this year in the 3rd round. Do we see any of them prevailing and can any of them be relevant? Parham is a huge target downfield, yards per catch of 15.9 last year, and 30% of his receptions were touchdowns. So this is a guy who is really hoping for the Donald Parham breakout. I kind of like the other 2 assets in the tight end room on this yes. team, to be honest.
The way you get a 30% touchdown rate is by not being thrown a lot of footballs, unfortunately.
Of course, of course. And it's not like he wouldn't know that.
Yeah, but I don't see Donald Parham as... If you're going to take a shot on a guy, take the aging, no one wants you Jared Cook asset. I take Jared Cook shares all day. He's going to be just fine. He's going to be in the end zone. He's going to be catching a lot of passes. He's played for so many different NFL offenses. He's going to be starting in week 1. He's going to be catching balls in week 1. He is not an elite athlete anymore by any standards. But I think he's going to be playing ahead of McKitty and Parham
for sure.
almost every passing down.
And I think everyone would pretty much expect that because Parham hasn't established himself yet. And Trey McKitty, of course, was just a rookie. What I would say about Jared Cook is that I'm just genuinely excited for him for this year because I think the offense is going to be efficient. Obviously, you've got Herbert going into his 2nd year. And then the target competition is not that great. You've got Keenan Allen and Eckler and Mike Williams, and then probably their new 3rd-round rookie, but it falls off pretty quickly. So I would say that Jared Cook becomes their 4th target, and that's a pretty exciting spot to be for any tight end. Off the top of my head, just talking about this year, he's definitely in my top 10 for tight ends. I would say you've got about 7 fairly elite assets, maybe 8. And then it drops off and he's kind of right there at like 9 or yeah. 10 is where he's going to end up for me in my redraft rankings. So
we're big Jared Cook fans here at Deep Dive Dynasty. So. I guess so. Like,
I just think he, you know, he could be a dynasty buy of the week because I just think he might be retired next year. But this year, I'm pretty confident he's going to be good.
Yeah.
If I'm going to take a future shot, because like I just said, Jared Cook could be gone. It's unfortunate for Donald Parham, but I would much rather go for Trey McKitty. He's a prospect that we liked a decent amount. You could go back to our pre-draft episode. We talk about him a little bit in depth because he was a tight end of the group that we quite liked. And he got that 3rd-round capital, which is pretty solid for a tight end. So I think he is a good late-round shot to take because, as we've already talked about with Cook, there's not a lot of other targets to go around. So you could see it next year where Trey McKitty could possibly be the tight end 1 on his team with only a couple of good targets elsewhere in the offense. So I'm very happy to be taking a shot on Trey McKitty late.
Mm-hmm.
His 2nd question is, Damian Harris, will he break out or burn out?
If I had to pick, then I guess I'm picking burnout.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to burn out.
Okay, I don't know if I agree, but I don't think he's going to burn brightly because I just know that this offense is going to use somewhat of a committee. Sony Michel is nothing at this point. The other running backs, like you've got Ramondre Stevenson, I do think Damian Harris is the clear number 1 guy on this team, but it's sad that that's not even a guy I'm insanely excited about. he might be undervalued. I don't know exactly what his ADP is right now, but I definitely don't see much Damian Harris hype out there. Like, people aren't going to be drafting him high in redraft, so he is a reasonable shot to take. But I think you kind of need to bet on Belichick going away from his traditional ways of using many guys, because as I see it right now, I think Sony probably will come in probably too often. And they also re-signed James White, who you know is going to take away a huge amount of the potential target share. So I think you've got all four of them involved, including Ramondre Stevenson. And if I had to guess who's going to come in and steal some touchdowns away, it's probably Ramondre Stevenson.
Yeah.
So it's just not an ideal scenario, because it's not going to be a prolific offense unless Mac Jones comes in and impresses everybody. It's at least in the range of outcomes. So I'm not targeting him. I would lean towards him turning into a bit of a bust. But at the same time, his hype will probably grow as he becomes the clear number one option before the season. But I'd probably be looking to sell him about then. Clarkishan, I think, says he's been reading up on rookie receivers face planting and never recovering, aka the data that shows that when you have wide receivers and they don't do anything in their first season, and that includes injuries, but of course also players that are healthy but just don't do anything, they basically never recover from that. And the data shows that your value is just going to keep going down if you don't produce in that year at all. So how much can we reasonably expect from guys like Mims, Edwards, Rager, Pittman, etc.? I would say, anecdotally, just how I see their situations, quite a few of those guys I still have some hope for, but I understand that the data does show that you are in a much better position to sell them now, because the large majority of them will become an N'Keal Harry, for example. You have players like Mims, like Rager, who were hurt last year, and obviously that is the most obvious reasoning that you can think of as why a player didn't break out in their first year. Because Mims, he had a couple games where he was on the field, similar to Rager. They just never established themselves as a one or anything, but they were still at least slightly involved. But it was their injuries that really hampered their total year statistics. Whereas someone like Edwards, I know the hype was going crazy for him before last season, and I actually still think he is worth that roster spot. I've picked him up off of waivers actually once this offseason, which I was surprised to see him on. But the chance of him really breaking out are incredibly low now, because he was healthy most of the year and he just never was able to establish any target share at all, even amongst Henry Ruggs, who I would also consider a disappointment of a rookie season. Henry Ruggs still put up a lot more points than Edwards did. So if I'm looking at these four specifically, you said Mims and Rager, if someone is willing to pay up similar to what they were last year, you have to factor it in that historically, regardless of if they were hurt or not, rookies that don't produce in year one probably never will. Pittman, I would say, is a little bit different because he did make some more noise. I know his stats are definitely a lot better than the other three listed here, so he doesn't fit the category quite as well. However, I actually am not as excited about Michael Pittman. The way that T.Y. Hilton just absolutely blew him out of the water at the end of the year, I'm a bit concerned that he might not ever really establish himself anything more than like a Mike Williams has done at the NFL level.
The one guy that I still harbor some excitement towards is Mims, because when he first started playing as a rookie, he did put up some great separation metrics, and I thought, oh, maybe there is time for Mims to make an impact. He didn't, really. And I understand that. But he's the one where I'd hold on to a little bit more hope that there's a chance year two, he starts making some stuff happen.
Moving on, Golden Domer. I know we've heard from him before. Golden Domer 28 says, rank the second rounders, Marshall, the two Moores, Tony, Sermon, and Amon-Ra St. Brown. Again, you could look at our rankings on Twitter here. We have them available. But for me, looking at that group, it is easily Marshall and Elijah Moore at the top, and I will put Marshall slightly above Elijah Moore, although that has been something I've changed on back and forth. Then clearly next is another tier where you've got Rondale Moore as well as Kadarius Toney, and at the bottom I will have Sermon, and then finally Amon-Ra St. Brown. I like Amon-Ra St. Brown, but compared to all of these other guys, he is at the bottom mostly because of draft capital. He did fall into that day three, early fourth round pick. A lot of these other guys are second rounders, and so they definitely have, you know, they're on a higher level for me when I'm ranking prospects.
I have the same thing, except I have Sermon. I want to put Sermon over Tony. Mm-hmm. And I want to do it, and I'm going to do it. Because Sermon is a better athlete. Mm-hmm. I believe that Sermon has a better shot of getting on the field and actually establishing himself.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be on part of a better offense. And I don't think he has as much competition as Tony. And for those reasons, I just have Sermon ahead.
Yeah, we had three players being Rondale Moore, Tony, and Sermon together in one tier. So I do think it's pretty reasonable to take any over each other. But as we already said, go check out our rankings on Twitter. Next up, from who else but Golden Domer 20. What are you trading away James Conner and Melvin Gordon for? Are you taking anything that you can get, getting out while you still can?
Hmm.
So if you're trading these guys away, what return are you looking for?
I'm still looking for a decent return because at the end of the day, they're both starting running backs. Like James Conner.
I don't think Melvin Gordon is a starting running back.
I don't really either. But if I'm in a trade talk, I'm saying, hey, James Conner right now, he's probably the starting running back of the Cardinals.
I would agree with that.
Melvin Gordon, yeah. Probably the starting running back of the Broncos. And maybe, you know, if you're trading with Colin, he'll be like, no. If you're trading with me, I'll be like, no. But if they're not both starters, they're obviously touching the ball in week one. Mm-hmm. No questions asked. And that as an asset alone, getting you value in week one, guaranteed, is enough that I wouldn't be settling for like a third round draft pick for these guys. You trading these assets away means that you've lost points in week one. So how are you going to get those back? Is the question you got to ask yourself.
I suppose. Hopefully you have some depth beyond Melvin Gordon and James Conner. I think for both of these guys, but especially for James Conner, I'm not selling him now. I'm going to wait a bit. Melvin Gordon, I think, still has a little more name value. People weren't quite as down on him as they have been on James Conner as of late. And James Conner, to me, has a greater role to come on a better offense. So I think there is going to be weeks early in this season where he is putting up big numbers, even if Chase Edmonds also is very involved. I still think James Conner can come in, get some touchdowns, and get the lion's share of the rushing work. So he is someone that I think is undervalued right now, and I'd much rather sell later in the year when the season started. Melvin Gordon is a little bit more iffy for me. He's definitely someone I would be willing to shop around, but I'm probably looking at like a late second or so for me to pull the trigger. If I'm thinking about my own drafts, the talent somewhat drops off around there, so I would probably, if I'm selling for a pick, really be monitoring that pick-to-pick price, because I think the difference between, like, in a super flex league, the 208 and the 301 is a pretty big gap. So there's a certain spot in the draft where I'm like, nah, I'd rather hold Melvin Gordon and see if he can blow up enough in the start of the season that I can trade him for more.
That's fair.
This is our final question. The real Wilt Clay says...
That's Wilt Clay.
That's him. Says, interested to see what your thoughts are on Adam Trautman having a sophomore jump and what his prospects are for each potential starting quarterback. So we already talked about the difference between Jameis and Taysom Hill. But I will say, if you look at the target competition, I am absolutely in on the Adam Trautman jump up sophomore season.
We talked about Jared Cook this episode as well.
Yeah, well, he's gone now. Guess who's his replacement? It's Adam Trautman. I liked him as a prospect. I thought he was a great value last year in rookie drafts. And then the benefit of Adam Trautman is just the wide receivers and the target options beyond Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara are nothing, really. No. I thought they might take a Terrace Marshall. There was rumors that next pick after Carolina taking Terrace Marshall, the Saints were lined up to take him. And player like that would take targets away from the tight end, but they don't have that top end player like that. So I could see him having a Robert Tonyan 2020 type year where he can score a lot of touchdowns. But as you already talked about in this question, there is a difference between those two quarterbacks. I hope that it would be Jameis Winston, because for all pass catchers across the offense, that bumps up the target, because I just think he's going to pass a lot more than Taysom will.
Jared Cook was a part of the offense that you could not overlook last year. He is gone. Trautman is the next guy up. He's also a better athlete. Yes, he's a better blocker, and yes, he'll be blocking more, but it just means he's going to be on the field more. I like Trautman. He's sneaky enough. Not a lot of people know his name. Yes, your savvy dynasty owners will, but before he starts doing anything, great guy to pick up.
Mm-hmm. He's someone that I'm targeting in trades right now, because I do think halfway through the season, regardless of if the guy in your league who has him right now, even if they value him reasonably high, there's a good chance in a year he's going to value him a lot higher. So I think the most likely scenario is that this is as cheap as he's ever going to be.
Yeah.
So I like to go out and get Troutman. If he's already on your team, don't sell him. Keep him, because I think he can blow up. That's it, everyone. That is this episode of The Mailbag. I'm sure we will come back to this again sometime in this off season because we love going through all of your questions. Mm-hmm. But before we close out the episode, of course, it's time for that deep dive dynasty buy of the week. Toby has 5 hints for me. If you want to learn all the rules about how this game works, just look in the description below. Toby, hit me with hint number one.
Hint number one. I had a 45 plus point game last year. That's right. 45 plus.
Okay, there's only a few. There's definitely not a lot. I'm going to guess Will Fuller.
Nope. But it's completely fine guess. Hint number two. I'm a running back. Top 10 running back. I finished in the top 10 last season.
Okay, so obviously my mind jumps to Alvin Kamara. He obviously fits both the two criteria because I know he scored more than 45 in that week. What was it, 16? Yeah, week 16. He absolutely blew up and won me a championship or two. But is Toby going to recommend me Alvin Kamara as a dynasty buy? That is the question. Or is there someone else who fits this criteria who I would rather go for? Let's go with it. I'll say Alvin Kamara and expect to be wrong.
I love it. You're wrong. Just wait for this third hint. Are you ready?
Okay.
Hint number three. In week one of 2021, I play the Saints.
Interesting. How well do I remember the schedule that came out this week?
Damn. It came out a full week ago, so...
It didn't immediately jump to my mind, which is a bad sign. Huh. Wow, I really can't remember for sure. This is almost just another stab at the same problem, but here's my reasoning. This is a player that I'm very confident was a top 12 running back, and Toby also would know he wouldn't jump to my mind immediately as a top 10 running back. Also, he is in the Saints division, so it's more likely that he's going to play them week one. I'm leaning towards, I'm correct here, going with Mike Davis.
It's incorrect, unfortunately. Nope. Hint number four.
Pretty good dynasty buy, if you ask me. Get Mike Davis.
Absolutely. Getting Mike Davis, it's a good dynasty buy. Despite some potential QB issues incoming, I just signed, well, this offseason, I signed a 4-year, $48 million contract with the team I'm now on.
So you say $48 million over 4 years, he's making 12 a year. That is good running back money, and I don't think there's too many running backs who made good money. So I am going to go with Aaron Jones.
That's the man. Ding, ding, dong. Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones, week two. I always like to throw out a crazy stat of a game, okay? Week two. 18 attempts, 168 yards on the ground and 2 touchdowns, 4 receptions for 68 and a touchdown. He put up 45.6. That's pretty nuts.
Yep.
Here's why I really like Aaron Jones. One, he's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. He's fantastic. He makes highlight plays. He can catch the ball. He can run the ball. The Green Bay Packers, who I sure didn't think they were going to sign him, went out and shelled out for him. They said, you are our guy. We're going to pay you millions. We want you here. And here's why I want him right now. He's the only running back, essentially. You got A.J. Dillon behind him. And with Jamal Williams gone, there are even more scat back opportunities. A.J. Dillon is not your typical scat back.
Totally not.
Aaron Jones' target share is going to go up. I think he's going to score more PPR points, or at least more points as a receiver. And that is something that I want to chase. Right now, with the whole Aaron Rodgers will he or won't he situation, doesn't affect Aaron Jones too much to me. I think Aaron Jones is going to be that constant on the Green Bay offense, whether you have Aaron Rodgers, Jordan Love, or Blake Bortles. It does not matter what happens on the offense in particular. I want Aaron Jones. He's obviously going to cost you a lot, but I think he's going to be better these next couple of years. So he's my dynasty buy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so obviously, you know, he's a top 10 running back, and so yes, he's going to be expensive. The reason why I think I like the dip is I don't want to buy too much into the rumors and this political nonsense with Aaron Rodgers and the Packers.
Yeah.
I think Aaron Rodgers will be the starting quarterback on their team, and I'm willing to put my proverbial money on the table making that type of trade going out for Aaron Jones, because I do think it would be a downgrade if you have especially Blake Bortles under center.
Oh, goodness gracious, yeah.
But most likely, I think you're just getting him at a slightly discounted value right now, because I do not think it will be Jordan Love or Blake Bortles. I think it will be Aaron Rodgers, and I think they will still be that prolific offense. But you're right, in comparison with someone like Davante Adams, it would impact him less. I will disagree with what you say about he is essentially the only running back there, because I also, despite hating his tape last year and not thinking he was a good pick, I like AJ Dillon at value right now, because I know they're not going to have a bell cow type system. And you're right, if you look beyond those two, their running back situation is awful.
And it's not like I don't know AJ Dillon's there, but
I think AJ Dillon gets 40% of the work, and that is quite a bit, assuming the Packers. AJ Dillon already at the end of the year last year was getting some work, and that's on top of Jamal Williams and Aaron Jones. I don't think they're going to give Aaron Jones that much of a lion's share. So I actually like going out and getting both, but what you're saying about Aaron Jones being the only pass catcher is absolutely true. I'm okay to go get either of these two guys. I think they're good shots to take, and Aaron Jones is obviously someone, regardless of the situation, you can be confident starting every single week. That's it, everyone. That is our 58th episode of the Deep Dive Dynasty podcast. Make sure you find us on Twitter at Deep Dive Dynasty, and we didn't have one this week. Leave us a review if you're listening on Apple Podcasts.
We'll
read it out just like we did last week, and we'll give you a little shout out for that. It helps the podcast a lot. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you again for hosting with me, Toby.
Anytime.
And have a good week, everybody.
Peace.